Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and happy Shabbat to one and all. Here we're doing a social distancing show, all except for Asher. She is still curled around my feet. Girl does not understand. Labradors have no clue of what it means to social distance. We'll do a little bit of news tonight. I would imagine that Paint is doing Paige's thing. This coronavirus thing just continues to be such a nightmare. Today, the U.S. Government issued its first forecast of the impact of it, the CBO. And what they reported is that the shutdown thus far is going to quadruple the anticipated federal deficit to a record $3.7 trillion in this fiscal year alone. Coming into this year, the deficit was expected to be $1 trillion. It is now going to be $4 trillion if they don't pass any more stimulus, which is a 0% possibility. Just this fiscal year. The CBO forecast of economic resurgence said that we are going to continue to be in a double-digit decline for at least through 2021, and this is the number that was stunning to me. U.S. gross domestic product is going to plunge by over 40% on an annualized basis in the second quarter. Mm-hmm. You know, a depression is when you have a contraction in the range of 5%. This is a 40% reduction of gross domestic product. I'll tell you what, our politicians obviously have no concept whatsoever of economics or business. The federal debt is going to equal 101% of gross domestic product by September 30th, and the 2020 federal fiscal year ends, it's going to grow to 108% of GDP.
That's amazing.
There's an article that went out yesterday by the former chief of neuroradiology at Stanford University. He said that the United States has to end the widespread coronavirus lockdowns and needs to adopt a more targeted and sensible approach, such that vulnerable people are kept safe while the nation as a whole builds immunity. Mm-hmm. He wrote, tens of thousands of Americans have died, and Americans are now desperate for sensible policymakers who have the courage to ignore the panic and rely on the facts. Leaders must examine accumulated data to see what has actually happened, rather than keep emphasizing hypothetical projections. Combine that empirical evidence with fundamental principles of biology established for decades, and then thoughtfully restore the country to function. Dr. Atlas wrote that because the overall mortality rate of the coronavirus is between 1/10 and 5/10 of 1%, that's based on the antibody studies, and because the mortality rate is even lower amongst healthy individuals under the age of 50, it makes absolutely no sense to continue requiring all of the population to isolate when such a small percentage of people are in real danger from COVID-19. Instead, Atlas wrote, states should craft policies that focus on protecting the elderly and those with chronic underlying conditions. Targeting that segment of the population, although it's smaller, will have the greatest impact on minimizing hospitalizations and reducing deaths. And guess what? The group over 65 is mostly retired. It's going to have no influence whatsoever on economic production. Oh, gee, we could have been sensible as opposed to destroying our economy. But no, our politicians love to play God. You can't leave your home. You can't work. You can't go to the beach. You can't play. You can't go to games. You can't do anything fun. For God's sake, you will be 100% dependent upon us, because for the first time ever, we get to control business. Oh, they haven't controlled business. They've shut it down. Congratulations, idiots. In fact, infected people without severe illnesses are the most effective and most available vehicle for establishing widespread immunity. By transmitting the virus to others in the low-risk group, who then generate antibodies, they block the network pathways toward the most vulnerable people, ultimately ending the threat. All we've done thus far is postpone it. We need to end it. Mm-hmm. Extending whole population isolation would directly prevent that widespread immunity from developing. People say, oh, but we have time. We can get a vaccine. Oh, yeah, there's 100 vaccines that are being developed right now. And let's say that one of these vaccines actually makes it through trial, which, by the way, they're no longer doing trials with animals. They're now the initial trials are with people. What are you going to do? Give it give 200 people, 500 people the vaccine, give 500 people no vaccine or a placebo, and then tell them, go get infected, see what happens. How else are you going to test it?
Yeah.
Unless you tell the control group and the non-control group to act similarly and be exposed to it. I mean, that's insane on itself. And let's say that they have some positive results from the control group and they don't kill a whole bunch of people in the non-control group. And they say, yep, this is interesting. We should broaden the tests. And then a few months later, they broaden the tests and they do not decide they're not going to take the time to see if there's any long-term effects, which there are for most everything. But we're not going to do that this time. We'll just bypass that. And we'll start manufacturing this in quantities that would actually make a difference in society. You're out about 6 to 9 months under the best of circumstances at this point. And this is a virus that has mutated 20-some times just in the past 3 months. So you're going to produce a virus, a vaccine that was designed for the virus that was as opposed to the virus that is? You know, the worst flu season we've had in recent memory was a year ago. Depending on which CDC report you read, between 60 and 80,000 people died.
Mm-hmm.
More than have died in America from the coronavirus, from that flu season. And the biggest issue was a huge percentage of the population was vaccinated, but the vaccine didn't work because the virus had mutated. No, we're accomplishing nothing is the bottom line. Oh, but the Trumpster has an answer for us. You know, did you hear? In fact, he has two. He has two answers for us. So what he said is that, so suppose that we hit the body with a tremendous, whether it's ultraviolet or just very powerful light, the president said. I don't think he knows that it's ultraviolet light that actually does this virus in. But we hit the body with it. So what we're going to do is going to sunburn everybody. Everybody be bright red. We'll know who was treated.
So, you killed corona, but now you got skin cancer.
So the answer here is that we're going to forget about this. This is a pulmonary and blood disease. And we're going to assume that the body is transparent, and we're going to zap it with ultraviolet light. Well, he went on to say, he did explain it. He says, perhaps we could put that light inside of people. That's what we need to do. We need to test it. He says, and I think you said that hasn't been checked. How is it that you haven't checked that, Dr. Brex? But you are going to test it, right? But that was the dumbest thing he said. And then I said, supposing you brought the light inside the body, which you can do either through the skin or in some other way. And I think you said you're going to test that too. Sounds interesting, the president continued. And then I see that disinfectants, where it knocks out the virus in a minute, 1 minute. And is there a way we can do something like that by injection or inside, almost a cleaning? So it'd be interesting to check that too. Mm. Pointing to his head, Mr. Trump went on to say, I'm not a doctor, but I'm like a person who has a good you-know-what. So the people that make Lysol disinfectant. Yeah, brain injury. People that make Lysol disinfectant. Yeah. The nation's leading disinfectant manufacturer. Put out a public service message today and said, Don't inject your body with
good thinking.
With disinfectant. Do not drink it. Do not eat it. Do not put it on your food as seasoning. It will kill you. When the president was pointing to his head, he was pointing out that he has no brains. They didn't have that part, but they should have. New study appeared last week from USC's Center for Economic and Social Research. It found that only 45% of workers in Los Angeles are still employed.
Staggering.
55% of the people who had jobs are now unemployed. The unemployment rate in Southern California is over 60%. It wasn't anywhere close to that during the Great Depression. Let's put some numbers just for context.
Okay.
52,000 Americans have died this year from the coronavirus. The death rate and the infection rate has plateaued about 2 weeks ago. 923,000 have been infected. The CDC reports that on an average year with the flu, you don't have 923,000 infected. 10 million to 45 million Americans get the flu each year. 45 million versus 923,000. In the United States, the flu will take anywhere from the absolute lowest we've had in any year in the last 50 years is 12,000. That's exceedingly low. The worst year was 60 to 80,000, which was 2017 to 2018. CDC reported 80,000. There's other reports that it was 60,000. The average for the United States is 40,000 a year. coronavirus has been worse this year than the average, not worse this year than the 80,000 in 2017, 2018. And on average, 500,000 worldwide die of the coronavirus, only a fraction of that. 500,000 die every year on the flu. Only a fraction of that have died on the coronavirus. The world has grossly overreacted. By the way, of the 10 to 45 million who get the flu, 200,000 to 800,000 are hospitalized each year. So more people are hospitalized in a bad year with the flu than have even contracted the disease. About the same number.
Mm-hmm.
A little different sickness. There is another plague out there. A recent publicized translation. They're going to call it a translation. I don't know why they call it a translation, because it isn't a translation. Of the New Testament has a glaring omission. What would you think if the none of them ever have God's name. No, one ever appears in any of them. But what do you think that the glaring omission would be? And I'll tell you that this was the Lutheran Church and that sponsored this. So they have a new Testament, and they decided that they were going to leave out a word. The word they decided to leave out, Israel.
I know, so I'm not going to say. Yeah.
Israel. Yeah, they left out Israel. The Danish Bible Society just published a revised translation of the New Testament. The new edition has many surprises, including a new name. It's no longer the New Testament. It's the New Agreement. Yeah, they're in agreement, all right. But even more shocking, the New Agreement has removed any reference to Israel. The new edition was reviewed by Jan Frost, who reported that the word Israel is used only once, and actually in the Bible, they call this Bible 2020, in which in all other places they simply replace it. Sometimes they replaced it with Jews or the land of the Jews, because their New Testament still has to denounce Jews, has to be anti-Semitic. It's very difficult to be anti-Semitic if you don't mention Jews. And how do you have replacement theology unless you cast the Jews in a bad light? So they mention Jews. They claim, the Bible Society claims, that Israel, referred to in the Bible, is not the same as Israel today. Oh, really? Oh, that'll be interesting. You might want to report that to God. Because last time I checked, I looked at the layout that God gave of the land for the 12 tribes, and it's pretty darn close to what he described. A little shy of it, but not much. Yeah. Frost noted that his explanation does not apply to the term Egypt, which remains in the Bible 2020, despite the fact that ancient Egypt was actually significantly different, both in borders and ethnic composition, than modern Egypt, which tells you that they replaced Israel because, well, they're anti-Semitic. Posts on social media actually suggested that the change may have been politically motivated as an anti-Israel statement. No, you think? No.
No, boy.
No. Bible 2020's Ellen Duncan, Global Council Chairperson for the Bible Society, noted the new edition has already been downloaded to more than 90 countries, which she considered to be a great success, moving towards a global church. Yes, indeed. Christians are lostians. This translation of the New Testament, the New Agreement, is an important reminder. Rabbi Wentz said the replacement theology is not just a problem of the past. Newsflash, boy, I was really astute of you there, Rabbi. Some segments of Christianity still have a replacement theology problem. Some segments, the entire religion is based upon replacement theology. Without replacement theology, there is no Christianity. Come on, Sherlock. The notion that Israel can be scrubbed from the Bible is as ridiculous as removing God from the Bible. No, it's as ridiculous, Rabbi, is removing Yahweh from Torah. Christian replacement theology, also called supersessionism, holds that the Christian church has succeeded the Israelites as the definitive people of God, except for the fact it never says so. Supersessionalism requires reading the term Israel, referring to either the people or the land, as an allegory for the Christian church. No, it requires you to have an idiot for God who can't be trusted, because it requires you to have your God have lied, well,
a couple of thousand times. Mm-hmm.
It should be noted that the Danish Bible Society is run by the Evangelical Lutheran Church, a strong proponent of replacement theology. In 2018, Robert O. Smith, a pastor of the World Council of Churches and the World Lutheran Federation, addressed a conference at St. Olaf Institute for Freedom and Community. Smith was seated before a boycott divestment sanctions banner, the BDS banner, and made these declarations. By the way, the BDS movement has announced that if Israel is the first to come up with a vaccine for the virus, they won't ban it. That's sweet of them. So, Mr. Robert O. Smith.
You want to give us something that's life-saving. We'll take that.
Yes. Pastor, yeah, well, they gave him the thing that is the ultimate life-saving. It's called the Torah, but they don't want to take that. The ancient Israelites are not linked in any substantive or material way to the contemporary modern state of Israel.
Really? Oh,
well, yeah, okay. So there's the 7.5 million Jews there, and the actual location on the land and the language they speak is not a substantive link in any material way. The biblical narrative of Israel has almost nothing to do with contemporary Israel. Well, I better tell that to God, because he has about 1,000 prophecies that talk about his return to Israel. So if Israel has been moved, you may want to tell God.
I don't think he got the memo.
No, he definitely didn't get the memo. He says Israel is nothing other than an intentional manipulation of sacred text to justify a political project. You know, these guys are so full of themselves and so dishonest. I can't wait for Yahweh to say, did you really say that? Would you like to chew on it? How about choke on it? I'm going to tell you one thing for sure. Mr. Robert O. Smith, he is not going to like Yahweh very much.
No,
Yahweh's not going to like him very much.
At the same
conference, Lutheran pastor and minister and theologian Rahib stated that it wasn't the Lord God who promised Israel the land. It was the Lord Balfour. Sheesh. So that whole conversation with Abraham, that's not in your Bible. Huh?
That didn't count.
Oh, by the way, he claimed that Jesus was a Middle Eastern Palestinian.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I better tell that to David. David would go kill him. The word Israel appears over 2,200 times in the Torah writings and prophets. It is also interesting to note that Jerusalem and its alternative Hebrew name, Zion, appear another 850 times. That would be 3,000 times that God must have been mistaken. The Christian God has to be a nincompoop. By the way, Christianity is not, nor is Judaism, the only disgusting religion. Islamist militants have killed 52 children in northern Mozambique. Police said that the villagers in Cabo Delgado province were massacred, with many of them beheaded, after some of the children refused to be recruited by the militant group. Recently, criminals tried to recruit young children to join their ranks, but there was resistance on the part of the youths. This provoked the anger of the Islamists, who killed cruelly, diabolically, 52 children.
Who are these people?
I don't know which one's worse. All right, we're going to return. We're actually going to go back to the beginning of Psalm 118. We were covering Psalm 118 from the Dr. Yah chapter. A little commercial here, if I may. We were looking for Alan during our last program. Alan got word that we were looking for him during the last program. He was listening, he was in the chat room. And he has made contact. He is diligently working. We appreciate it very much on preparing Coming Home, the two volumes for publication at Amazon. We have a whole team coordinated by Jackie, Molly, and JK, who have been diligently editing all of the, I guess it's like 27 or 28 chapters of Coming Home in Our Time. And then in addition to that, because we're in a narrower frame, the books at Amazon are 6 inches by 9 inches, which means that the internal borders would be almost 2 inches shy of that, an inch left, right, top, and bottom. And I'm trying to keep the formatting and font the same that it is on the written text. And so the only way to do that is to shrink the margins that I have been using. And so I've gone through and I've changed everything, which will make now the online versions of these books match the printed versions, which I think will be a lot easier for people and less confusing when they're going between them or talking to various people on them or going back and forth. And then since we came up with a very new look, coordinated look, so that everything in the Yada Yawa family has a similar look and feel, we have come up with new covers front and back for observations, and I've turned observations into four volumes. I've finished the work on the first two volumes and am halfway through volume three. Also doing a complete edit pass based on some of the things that we've learned to bring it up to date. And then after that, we'll do we'll turn Introduction to God into two or three volumes, and then I intend to turn edit Questioning Paul, turn it into a couple of volumes, and then pick the best of Yada Yah. I think we'll do we'll turn four volumes of Yada Yah into what will probably be eight volumes on this new format. So it's a lot of editing, a lot of updating. We have a whole team trying to remove my my propensity to create typographical errors and mispunctuation here and there. But I think we're going to have a really, really excellent product when we're done. So I want to thank Alan and Jackie and Molly and JK and Mike. So many other people now are active in helping with this project.
Yeah. Hear, hear. Applause.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, thank you. So here we are now returning to what is out of the Dr. Yah chapter, which is volume 2, chapter 12 now of Coming Home, and it begins. Choose of your own free will to articulate what you know, acknowledging your appreciation to Yahweh, because he is generous and good. His enduring love, unfailing kindness, and genuine mercy are truly everlasting. That is what we are committed to doing. That's what you do, JB, on your website. That's what you do, Kirk, when you translate and share. It's what I do every day. We choose of our own free will. No one is forcing us to do this. No one is paying us to do this. We don't accept donations. We're not sponsored by any institution. We do this strictly because we enjoy Yahweh's company and we enjoy learning.
May I say something about free will?
Sure.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, go ahead.
That's rather staggering. You know, I was thinking about that so many times, and I've been using that line for a while now, that to remind people that when God gives you free will, he can't command you to do anything.
Yeah, that is correct.
And,
yep,
and
the moment he gives you free will, he can't command.
Stops him. No. And it stops him in the track. He said all he can do is offer you something, encourage you to do something, and hope that you'll respond correctly. In fact, I even mentioned that he really can't do, other than a few instances where he can protect because he's promised to protect his people, he really can't intervene with all these tragedies that we have in our lives.
No. No,
because
you know, it's all these people
that
are trying to play, you know, praying to God to intervene and save them from the virus and save the world. God can't intervene.
Yeah.
No, because
that one little word.
Right. What? Right. Free will. Because if he were to intervene, then so he's going to save Sally, but not Sue, Jim, but not Jack from the coronavirus. He's going to allow it to kill 50,000 people, but not 60,000 people. He's going to stop coronavirus entirely, but not heart disease or pulmonary disease or diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to stop AIDS because, well, that has a social stigma, but he will stop people from dying from malaria. I mean, what is it? What did you want your God to do? Do you want your God to make certain that no one can make a mistake, that there can never be a drunk driver, no one can choose to drink and drive, so there'll never be another family or a little child that's wiped out? What do you want your God to do?
You can't.
Well, when is God's intervention so significant that that life is a mockery, that we're nothing but little pawns that he moves around the chessboard? If you can't lose, if you can't fail, if you can't hurt, then what is life? Why would you even bother to get up out of bed in the morning if there was nothing you could do to make a difference?
True.
So it is a powerful concept. This was written in the Hifl imperative. In Hebrew, there are stems, there are conjugations, and there are moods. The Hifl is a stem. What the Hifl stem says is that the subject causes the object to participate in the action as if the object is an understudy becoming like the subject. The imperfect, if something's written in the perfect, means ongoing action. Mm-hmm. The perfect is action that's finite in time. This was written in the imperative. It's one of three moods in Hebrew. The jussive, the imperative, and the cohortative all express volition, with the imperative being volition in second person, cohortative is volition expressed in first person, and jussive is in third. So if it's going to be written, you need to express it. If you're going to convey the meaning of the words, you have to express it. And the moment you start to express the moods in Hebrew, then you can't have a commandment anymore. There can't be any obeying. It's all choosing. And by the way, Dodd in his Psalms attributes free will to God too. He has free will.
Mm-hmm.
Just as we do. So choose of your own free will to articulate what you know, acknowledging your appreciation. It's yada. This is yada, though, as YD, it's yod, deleth, hey, as so it's the feminine, if you will, of the concept, although it's a verb and verbs don't have masculine and feminine, but it would typically the at the end would make a word feminine. Confess your admiration. It's from yada, to know, to understand, to perceive, and experience, to recognize and acknowledge. Yahweh. Now, Yahweh is an accurate transliteration of the name of Eloah, God, as guided by his Torah instructions regarding his Haya existence and our Shalom reconciliation. Those words, which are the most common in Hebrew, tell us how to pronounce his name. Why? Because he is Tob. Tob means a lot of things. Generous, good, beneficial, pleasing, joyful, desirable, beneficial, and agreeable. I think when you did your study of Tob, Kirk, you came up with it's a productive concept, something that produces value.
Yeah, as opposed to being dysfunctional. Yeah, there was, yes, absolutely. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
and then it says he is chesed, his enduring love, unfailing kindness, and genuine mercy, his devotion and loyalty, his affection and commitment to the relationship, as well as his generosity, are truly everlasting. Well, if Yah was merciful, what's the point of the new agreement?
Well, how do you paint him otherwise?
Yeah. Well, replacement theology. There's this myth that replacement theology is just having all the promises made to Israel be transferred to the Christian church. Well, that's only a small part of it. It's also that Christians and Gentiles replace Jews. But that's just a small part of it. It's the God of the Old Testament, Yahweh, is replaced by the God of the New Testament, Jesus.
The good guy.
But that's just a small part of it. It's that the God of the Old Testament is mean and cruel and out of touch. So we need a new, more modern God that is loving and accepting. He has a whole new person. God's personality is replaced. And, of course, it all begins with replacing Dod with Jesus, so that all of the titles and gifts that Yahweh gave and promises that Yahweh made to Dod, David, are given to the Christian Jesus, so that the Christian Jesus gains credibility. So the Christian Jesus becomes the Messiah when Dod is the Messiah. When the Christian Jesus, who called himself the Son of Man, has to become the Son of God, even though the Son of God is Dod, according to God. According to God, Dod is the shepherd and Yosha is the lamb.
Mm-hmm.
The King of Kings is Dod. Not Yosha, he was never a king. The second coming is Dod, David, not Jesus. The sacrificial lamb doesn't come back. There's no encore for the lamb. And so it's a replacement of everything across the board. And there's this no acceptance of the fact that God has only one name, it is Yahweh. He is generous and good, and his enduring love and his unfailing kindness and genuine mercy are everlasting. Israelites should choose of their own volition to say, indeed, his enduring love, unfailing kindness, and genuine mercy are eternal. Now, this doesn't say Christians ought to say. Do you think if God wanted to say Christians, he could have, right?
I think he could. Mm-hmm.
If God wanted to say, Gentiles should say of their own volition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a perfectly good word for that. Goyim.
Yeah, Goyim.
But he said Israelites.
Yes.
And those are the people that conveyed God's message to the world. And they should, of their own volition, say, indeed, his enduring love and unfailing kindness, his genuine mercy, are eternal. But, of course, they won't even say his name. And then we read this, I don't know if it was this week or last week, the family of Aaron. Please.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this adds a nah. Please, I implore you and beseech you of your own volition, truthfully, his enduring love, unfailing kindness, and genuine mercy are eternal.
Wow.
Yeah. Say it.
Argue with that.
Confess
argue with
it.
That.
Yeah. And, of course, the beauty of him saying, the family of Aaron is that Aaron was a screw up.
Yeah.
You know, Aaron
calf,
was,
so.
The golden calf's got Aaron's name all over it.
Yeah.
And when Moshe decided that he wanted to marry a Cushite woman, oh man,
mm-hmm.
Aaron, he had a conniption fit over it.
Yeah.
He was always plotting against his brother.
Yeah.
Dumb thing to do. You don't plot against your brother when your brother is God's favorite person on earth at the time.
On the planet.
Yeah. When God is doing miracles through your brother and revealing the Torah, his testimony through your brother, you don't screw with your brother.
Yeah, don't be.
Some advice, you know, to other Aarons of the world. But nonetheless, by saying family of Aaron, he's saying, hey, you family of screw-ups. You know who you are. Of your own volition, please say, truthfully, his enduring love, unfailing kindness, and general mercy are forever. That's Mizmor, Psalm 118, for those of us who are trying not to screw up. Those who respect Yahweh, I implore you, choose of your own free will to convey his enduring love, unfailing kindness, and general mercy are absolutely everlasting. I mean, he's trying to hit all the points here. I mean, if you are not part of one of these, you know, just generally choose of your own free will to acknowledge that Yahweh is generous and good, that his enduring love and unfailing kindness are truly forever. Israelites, you should of your own volition say indeed his enduring love and genuine mercy are internal. Family of screw-ups of Aaron, of your own volition say that truthfully his enduring love and genuine mercy are surely eternal. And just the rest of you who respect Yahweh, I implore you, please choose of your own free will to convey surely his enduring love, unfailing kindness, and genuine mercy are absolutely everlasting. You know, when we say that, we're acknowledging something that's really profound. Yes. God provides genuine mercy and enduring love. And so there obviously has to be a way to for us to achieve it. And of course, first and foremost, we ought to respect Yahweh. We ought to acknowledge Yahweh. We ought to be listening to Yahweh and responding to him. That might put us in pretty good position to receive his mercy. During times of difficulty, this is Dode speaking, David, I called upon Yah, and he answered me in the vast expanse and the freedom of Yah. Such an interesting perspective here. So he's telling everybody else that acknowledge that God is this way, and Dode to say, listen, I've had difficult times. That's why I love the stories that are told in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, because all the people are real, warts and all.
Flawed.
Yeah. They're relatable. Dode has difficulties. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you guys, but, well, I know about you guys. You have difficulties too.
Mm-hmm.
Our lives are challenging. And during times of difficulty, Dode says, I invited Yah into my life. I welcomed him. I summoned him. I called out to him. I recited Yah's name. And
big surprise here.
He answered me. If you call out to God by name, you respect God, you acknowledge that he is merciful and generous and kind, yeah, he'll respond. He responded in the vast expanse of the freedom, Merkab, in the infinity of space and time and the capacity to grow of Yah. Marvelous, marvelous term. This, the religious have screwed up is they want their God to be omnipresent and omniscient. Well, if God were omnipresent, then he loses all self and all identity. He's in the grass, he's in the slug, he's in the rock. And if he's all present, then there's no place to go to be with Yah because you could just hug a rock.
Yeah, and then if he's going to make you like him, then you're going to be the same. Is that what you want?
Right, and if God were not a dimension, at least one dimension beyond the universe that he created, he could not have created the universe with words. So he has to be in a vast expanse and a dimension beyond us. And that dimension has to be awesomely liberating. That's what it's it says, because we're trapped in the flow of time and we can't even envision, much less maneuver, in the fifth and sixth and seventh dimensions. Yeah, I was liberated in all of them. And someday we will be liberated in all of space-time.
Wow.
Such a wonderful sentiment. Yahweh wants us to be like him, free. Yahweh approaches me and draws near. I'm not intimidated. That's one of the things that very early on in this process, the more Yahweh would talk and the more I listened to him, the more I saw him interacting, the more I realized that what he has a little bit of a sarcastic vein to him. He's a little funny. He's got a sense of humor. Yeah, got a sense of humor. Yeah. That he's just real. He gets mad when he should get mad. He's happy when he should be happy. He's never boastful. He's always approachable. Considering he's God, he's exceedingly humble.
Yeah.
You know, Dode says, hey, Yah draws near and approaches me, and I'm not intimidated. Then he says, what can man do to me? How can mankind affect me? That's my whole deal. You know, I'll hear concerns that Leah will have that, you know, the coronavirus, this, that, and, you know, you're a prime target, and I'm a prime target, you'll say, and, you know, this thing was engineered in a lab, and, you know, it's got HIV in it, and it's got some Ebola strain in it, and it was manufactured to be especially effective and debilitating a human host, And you know, we ought to be really concerned. And you know, my response is that, what is a virus going to do to me? Now, God has something he wants accomplished. And while I'm not going to be an idiot, I'm going to go out and be as effective a witness as I can be. And I'm going to be a lot more effective of a witness if, you know, like I do some smart things, like I don't shake hands anymore. Like I stand 6 feet from people. If I touch something, I come back and I wash my hands. And I'm really diligent about taking my vitamins and getting lots of sleep. So, you know, I'm going to be smart about it. But why would I fear a virus? I'm not going to fear anything that man can dish out. No. Life is way bigger than anything man can do to any of us. He says, and this is makes him one in a million. Yahweh's concerned about me. He's ready to help me, assist me, and support me. This is Ba'azar Ani. It's the same word that Yahweh used of Chawa in the garden with Adam. Chawa was conceived to be of Azar, help.
Helper.
To Adam.
Yep.
She was going to help Adam with something that really, 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 really is important. The very thing that the world is suffering from right now. Companionship.
Mm-hmm.
We are very social creatures. In fact, most animals are social. And we do not do well independently. We thrive on company. And so when Yahweh created Adam, was having a great time with Adam, and Adam was having a good time with him. But Yahweh realized, if I don't create an opportunity for Adam to be fulfilled with his social needs, his needs for companionship apart from me, then I am really making him dependent upon me. You know, and I'm not going to be like the governor of California, where I want everybody to be dependent upon me. I want them to be independent, because unless you're independent, you can't make a choice under the auspices of free will.
Yes.
And you can't enter into a loving relationship without independence. Plus the fact, a person who is dependent is a burden. Well, a person who is independent and chooses to engage in a relationship creates synergy. So what Yahweh said is, if I create this Azar mate for Adam, then Adam's going to have a chance. He can be fulfilled and enjoy the company of Chawa, and also he can choose to enjoy my company. And, oh, by the way, the two of them can hook up and create little little Adams and little Chawas. And rather than having a single son, we can have a really big family. And we can do a lot of fun stuff together that we couldn't do as just the two of us when there's many of us. We can make the entire experience more enjoyable for everyone. Well, the same term is the same. This is our term. Is the same term that Yahweh used to Chawa. So God is saying that I'm existing to be Dod David's helper. Now, when I was doing Prophet of Doom, I felt that Yahweh was my helper. I felt that God was actually working to make that project a success. And I think to a large degree in writing these, now it's, by the time we're finished, it's going to be like 25 different volumes now, that Yahweh has played a major role helping to provide sensible translations and profound insights.
Right.
Yahweh helps us. And it's what he should be doing. You know, last time I checked, children, when they're young children, don't help their fathers and mothers. Even when they contribute, say, okay, I'll go clean my room, they typically make a bigger mess of things. You want to say, why don't you help me fix some dinner tonight? You know, you're going to be, it'll be fun, but it's more work than it's worth, except for the enjoyment of the whole thing. But parents can help their children, and they like it. So that's what God's saying. I'm here to help Dod. He's my son. I'm here to help him. I'll support him. Therefore, I shall consistently direct my gaze upon those who shun and dislike me. That's a really interesting transition, isn't it? From 118, in fact, it's the second half of what is now 118.7. So God is here to help me. Therefore, I'm going to direct my gaze upon those who shun and dislike me. What Dod is saying is this. There aren't very many people that God chooses to help, where he's going to play an active role in their lives to help them do something he wants accomplished. But if you're one of those people, then you're going to keep a wary eye on those who would shun you and dislike you, because those people are working against God's interests. Mm-hmm. Not many people can say that. Not a lot of people have God working for them, supporting what they're doing. But if you are one of those people, you're going to keep a steady eye on anything that undermines what God is trying to achieve. And you're that individual like Dod's. His purview was what God was doing through him, revealing these Mizmor and Mashals, Proverbs, and unifying and protecting his people. So anybody that was adverse to that was adverse to God's interests. And that's why Dod kept them in his sights. It is beneficial and good, indeed much better, to rely upon and trust Yahweh than it is to put confidence in humans. Well, if there was ever a, we should post this on the refrigerator. Maybe we should post this.
Yeah.
Maybe this should be on a billboard. Maybe this should be on the door of every home in the world. How do you get any better than that? It is beneficial and good. And indeed, much better to rely upon and trust Yahweh than it is to put confidence in humans. But how many people are dependent upon their government for entitlements, for Social Security, for Medicare and Medicaid, for any form of health insurance, for their to pay for their education, for their defense, or their religion for their salvation? Wouldn't you estimate there's probably 99% of people that are dependent in one way or another on something of man? And Doe says, no. It's better to rely on Yahweh than it is on men. First condition of the covenant, you know, you have to walk away from your country and the family of man such that you can join the family of God. It's just better. Yeah, you know, guys, we were all, well, you weren't religious, but we were all a bit political, and some of us were religious. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you lost anything by saying goodbye to that stuff?
No.
No. Gained a ton.
I feel relieved and liberated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. Yeah, in fact, the more I know about politics, like I can read the idiot stuff that's coming out from both the right and the left, and just mock them and laugh them and glad that I'm not associated with them and that I'm not on one side trying to defend the other.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, guys, the first casualty of the coronavirus wasn't a person's life, but was the truth.
Yeah, it's constitution and truth. Yeah. Yeah. All your freedom went away. The only thing that we should want.
You lost freedom. You lost freedom and integrity. Truth. And freedom and to some degree even life.
Yeah.
So that one's a spectacular one. That is one of those that gets a gold star. It is beneficial and good, indeed much better, Tob. It is desirable and pleasing, joyous and agreeable, beautiful and valuable, fortuitous and positive, as well as altogether more productive. To Batach, rely upon and trust. To put one's confidence in and expect something from one's reliance on Yahweh than it is to batach, put one's confidence in, to rely, to expect something from the descendants of Adam, humankind.
Wow.
It is more beneficial and productive to be protected by Yahweh than it is to trust in leaders or government officials. Just in case you've been so indoctrinated by religion and politics and patriotism and all of this make America great again, family of man, that you couldn't recognize this simple elegance and beauty of the last statement. God is going to double down. It is more beneficial and productive to be protected by Chesed, to find safety and comfort, deliverance in Yahweh, than it is to batach, trust, and nadib, and leaders or government officials.
I had a lady tell me this week that I should be more respectful of the soldiers, because after all, they gave me all this freedom.
How did they do that, ma'am? And, yeah, could you tell me how they did that, ma'am?
It was perfectless to try to go there. I mean, I it just wouldn't fly. They went just over the head. But well, how free do I feel at the moment in California?
Yeah,
I'm locked in. I got maybe two or three places I go. I can't go get a dead gum haircut. I look like a old hippie.
Yeah. Yeah, the National Guard was, which is part of the military, will
stop you.
Lock you up. Yeah, we'll lock you up. Yep. And I want to know what battle that any soldier of the last 100 years fought to keep America from being
free.
Occupied by a foreign power. Can you please tell me? Because I'm here to tell you the Japanese weren't about to invade the continental United States, and they could not have occupied it for a week, much less for years. A little island like Japan, and they're going to come, and they're going to project their force to America. They're going to take every Japanese person out of Japan, and they're going to put them all on a bunch of boats, and they're going to do a D-Day type landing on the shores of California, and then go across the country and say, "Yeah, we own you now. You belong to us. We're hereby occupying you.
I mean, they have no interest in it.
Oh, my goodness. And you think that the Germans?
Well, they had no oil. How are we going to get all those people over?
Yeah.
You got to float the boat, you know. You got to power the boat. They don't have it.
Japan just didn't want us to get involved. They thought if they took out our Navy, we wouldn't be able to get involved, and they could go about what they were doing.
You know, the Japanese occupied small sections of China for a short period of time at tremendous losses. Yeah. They occupied sections of Korea for short periods of time at tremendous losses. They occupied the Philippines for short periods of time at tremendous losses.
Tough.
They occupied some islands in the Pacific for short periods of time at tremendous losses. Do you think that the Japanese were going to invade Russia and try to occupy it?
No, they're not stupid.
Do you think that the Japanese could have occupied all of China?
No.
And you think they're going to cross the ocean and they're going to occupy the United States?
Yeah, where's your supply line?
Yeah, so, where's your supply? Oh, my goodness. So how is it? I mean, obviously, this woman wouldn't have thought that those 57,000 Americans that died in Vietnam were making America free from Vietnamese.
Well, that was my point.
Don't you know the Viet Cong crossing the sea and taking over America?
Yeah. How about the 35,000 Americans that lost their lives in Korea? Were they protecting us because the Koreans were going to invade and occupy America? How about when Ronald Reagan sent the Navy down to Grenada?
No threat.
So do you think that the 9/11 suicide bombers, who mostly came from Saudi Arabia, were the Saudi Arabians trying to occupy America? And did the tens of thousands of Americans who have died and the another 250,000 Americans who committed suicide because of what their country asked them to do, did they sacrifice their lives to keep the Afghanis and the Iraqis from occupying America?
Yeah.
Navy does Afghanistan? Oh, I thought, well, man, Afghanistan's landlocked, isn't it? Okay, what kind of a Navy? You've seen the biggest boat that the Iraqis had? I mean, it's like a PT boat. I'm not even sure it's that big. And you're going to project a force, and you're going to occupy them? Come on, folks. The U.S. military has not sacrificed lives to keep America free. It's utter and complete nonsense. Propaganda. And it continues to be so. You think that the Spanish-American War was to protect American freedoms, or was it a land grab? How about the Mexican-American War? Protect American freedoms or a land grab?
It's always a land grab. It's always we steal.
One.
We like to steal things.
Yeah. So World War One. You want to tell me what country was going to invade America over in Europe, so that we had to go sacrifice American lives for what? To keep J.P. Morgan from going bankrupt? For what? Oh, it's always been a lie. And it continues to be a lie. I mean, the only war that you could make any justification for American freedom would be the Revolutionary War. And even then, 2/3 of Americans were against it.
Absolutely. They were wanting to stay with the king.
Yeah. And the war that was the deadliest for Americans was the Civil War. And that war absolutely wasn't about freedom.
No.
No, the military.
It was about
take away freedom.
Anyone's.
Yeah,
anyone's.
It was used because the northern states didn't want the southern states to have the freedom to not be part of the Union anymore. It was the anti-freedom war. It is more beneficial and productive to be protected by Yahweh than it is to trust leaders or government officials. So the answer to her is Psalm 118:9.
Yeah.
Just say, you know, you've got a Bible at home, sweetheart. why don't you look up Psalm 118:9? Is more beneficial and productive, protected by Yahweh, than it is in leaders or government officials, in institutional rulers and nobility or princes, in liberal ideas which are incited or impelled. Every nation and ethnicity circle and surround me. In the name of Yahweh, I will indeed continually fend them off. Psalm 118:10. That has not happened, has it? Now, Dodd didn't fight a whole lot of people. You know, Dodd only fought those who had designs on Israel. He never traveled any distance away from Israel, only far enough to strike a blow at an invading army. He was never surrounded by every Gentile nation, but he will be, because there will be the second coming of Dodd. And he is going to be given the same job that he had before, defending God's people. In the name of Yahweh, I will indeed fend them off.
We get to watch, right?
We do.
Yeah, we'll be back with the crowd.
Yeah, I do. Going to be fun for me because everyone has accused me of having a bromance with Dodd. So, you know, I'm going to be swooning.
Yeah, well, we're all going to be going, wow, man.
Hey,
JB, look at that. That's Dodd over there.
That's Dodd over there. That's our guy. That's my king there. You go, Dodd. We might even be handing him some rocks for his sling.
Yes, that's why.
I don't think he'll need
those. I'm okay playing squire to Dodd.
Yeah.
No, I think he'll do it with light, but we'll help him out the
place too. Yeah, he will be doing it with light, but nonetheless. Those who surround me like a swarm of wild bees, they'll be snuffed out and extinguished like a fire on the wick among thorns. So God, Dodd, and he's inspired by Yahweh. The spirit of Yahweh came upon Dodd when he was a young boy and never left him. He was inspired to write that those who surround me like a swarm of warm bees. So he looks at the lives of those who are opposed to him and to his people and to his God as nothing more than a menace, something that can sting, that needs to be batted away, and best of all, snuffed out. His view is they're Africanized bees, these things that are no longer of any value. They're very aggressive, and the only thing to do is to snuff them off like a fire on a wick among thorns. In the name of Yahweh, I fend them off, and they cease to exist. You get the feeling here that Dodd is the eradicator. When Yahweh needs to fumigate the house to get the vermin out, he calls in Dodd. He is the ghostbuster of Yisrael. In the name of Yahweh, I fend them off and they cease to exist. Who are you going to call? Dodd.
Yes.
I was thrust aside and pushed to the limit, such that I was someone to be neglected and considered inferior, but Yahweh rendered assistance, and he helped me. Now, it's hard to believe that Dodd, of all people, be thrust aside, was neglected and considered to be inferior.
Well, Paul
I mean,
did.
Even when his sons tried to revolt against him, no one thought that Dodd was inferior.
No, they were trying to take over his kingdom, but they didn't think he was inferior.
Yeah. The person who thought he was inferior was Paul. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know what Paul said? You know, he's dead and gone. His body has decayed. He ain't coming back. Well, I got news for you.
It's not true.
Was told that every attribute from Messiah, the Son of God, that was given to Dodd, Paul took from Dodd and gave it to his Dionysus character named Jesus. So Dota's saying, you know, they may be doing that. There's got this replacement theology, and it starts with taking the promises God gave to me and giving them to the wannabe God of the make-believe God of Christianity. But God's having nothing to do with it. God's on my side. God's not just on my side. God is supporting me. He's helping me, is what Dode is saying. And he was, because Dode was God's firstborn son. Yah is my source of strength and power. He is the best of who I am.
Wow. What a cover.
Wouldn't you like to be, I know. Wouldn't you like to be able to say that?
I
couldn't say that just because I'm not good enough to associate God with the best of who I am. No, the best of who I am is not good. It's not good enough to be associated with God. So I couldn't say that.
Yeah, I
couldn't say it. I admire Dode for being able to say it.
Yeah.
I would love to be where Dode is and say that. Maybe one day we will say that.
Yeah.
But I guess there's a way we could kind of approach it. We could say, you know, at our God makes us much better than we would otherwise be. Our best attributes at our the best possible moments are influenced by Yahweh. We give credit to Yahweh for what we know and for what we have learned and for what he has provided. But it is a whole another kettle of fish to say Yahweh is my strength and my power and the best of who I am. He says he's the one that makes me value and able to sing. It's a compound of ma to inquire about and mizmor, the lyrics of a song. Isn't that kind of an interesting word? Zimara.
Yeah.
He exists for me as a means to liberty, deliverance, and salvation. Wahaya la ane la Yeshua. Mizmor 118:14. Yahweh exists for Dode, as opposed to Dode exists for Yahweh.
Yeah.
Dode's got it right. I mean, the whole concept of a father-son relationship is that the father is devoted to his son.
Well, Yahweh's name. He's lifting him.
Yeah.
He's doing the lifting.
Yeah.
I mean, he's told you a million times. I know I'm not talking to you. I'm just talking to all of us.
Yeah.
He tells us a million times. Wahaya,
you could write that. Yahweh is here for me. And what he is giving me, first and foremost, is liberty.
Yeah.
And then what he's giving me, second most, is deliverance.
Yes.
And that leads to salvation. Liberty, freedom. Freedom to act, freedom to read, freedom to observe, freedom to learn, freedom to think, freedom to respond. First and foremost, he's giving me liberty. And then he's helping me by delivering me from all of the corruption of human institutions. And thereby saving me. We do such an injustice, and this is my fault. I did something I usually don't do. You know, usually I will I'll look at the lexicons and I will remove the religious connotations from their definitions, and I will try to get to the real primary, secondary, and tertiary meanings of the words and the roots of the words, and convey them accurately without any religiosity. And yet with Yasha, I guess it was the salvation was so ingrained in me from my days long ago of being a Christian that I see Yasha and I went to salvation. And yet salvation is a byproduct of Yasha. It's not the purpose of Yasha. Yasha, you look up in any lexicon, the primary meaning of Yasha is to be free. Its secondary meaning is to be delivered, to be independent, to be removed from harm's way. So to be safe from human institutions, to be removed from human institutions, to be delivered from our mortality and from the corruption of religion and politics, free so that we can choose to learn, to respond, to think, to engage. It's a much more powerful concept when we translate Yasha correctly. That was Ms. Moore, 118.14. There is the sound of pronounced jubilation and freedom within the temporary dwelling places of those who are right. The rightful orientation of Yahweh engages and acts with strength and ability. Yeah, we're vocal. Yes, we're happy. We're optimistic. You know, we were talking again with Leia, and the coronavirus thing has her distressed. And I said, I'm not the least bit worried about it. I mean, for me, everything has a happy ending. In fact, it didn't even have a happy ending. It has a happy beginning. But all there is wonderful things to look forward to. And even in the moment, life is wonderful. Jubilant, optimistic, overwhelmingly positive, and freedom, total liberty, complete deliverance from the stigma and the stain of human political and religious, conspiratorial and propagandist ideas that resonates throughout this temporary dwelling place of those of us who are right, Sadak. We're correct. This rightful orientation of Yahweh engages and acts, empowering, enabling, enriching. Beautiful concept, so beautifully presented. The right hand of Yahweh lifts up. Right. Rightful orientation engages and acts. The right hand of Yahweh, those who are right in this dwelling place, right. Nothing more important than being right with Yahweh, and the ultimate person who was right with Yahweh is Dode. Because when you're right with Yahweh, everything else happens. The right hand of Yahweh lifts up. Look at Yahweh's name. His right hand is the first letter of his name.
Yeah.
Dode happens to be Yahweh's right hand.
I like what you said. Everything has a happy ending. That's really good.
Yeah. You know, and it's even better than that. It has a happy beginning.
Yeah, that's even better. I'm going to write that down. Pause a minute. Well, I write that down.
Everything has a happy beginning. Every new day is a happy new beginning. Eternity is a happy beginning.
Yeah.
Everything is optimistic and favorable. Life is wonderful. It's exciting. It's beautiful. Every day is an opportunity to learn, to grow, to share, to live. Dode writes, and listen, when Dode speaks, he's either speaking for us and that we should all feel these, come to the same conclusion, articulate and respond the same way, or he's raising the bar so that we can strive to be more like him. And some of the cases, he says things that, Yahweh represents the best of who I am. That's striving up there for a bar that's set way up there above us. But nonetheless, you know where the target.
You know where the bar is.
You know where the Olympic gold medal winner is. What height that bar is set. And he says, I shall not experience a prolonged death. Instead, I will continue to live so that I can recount, record, and relate the work of Yahweh. One of the reasons that I'm optimistic is that Yahweh protects those who are engaged in doing what he wants done. Now, there's a lot of us that are doing what Yahweh wants done. Mm-hmm. I'm going to personalize it for me, and you should be personalizing it for you. Yahweh is going to protect those who are doing what he wants done. I shall not experience a prolonged death. You can say the same thing.
Yes.
Terry can say the same thing. JB, you're saying the same thing. You're not going to experience a prolonged death. Instead, I will continue so that I can recount, record, and relate the work of Yah.
Wow.
That's what we do. We are relating, we are recording, we are recounting, we're documenting, we're proclaiming the work of Yah. Now, Maaseh Yah. You know, I was sent a letter by a marvelous gentleman the other day that he suffered a debilitating blow by someone that malfeasance that caused him to be in tremendous pain and bedridden, and it's really a heartwarming story because he didn't turn bitter, and in the midst of all of this, Yahweh reached out to him. He found our books and our shows, and this past year, bedridden and in pain, he finally found a doctor who would perform circumcision. And he was circumcised this past year. And this was the first year that he was able to celebrate Pesach Matzah Bikurim. And he wrote me this tearfully joyful letter about just how amazing it was for him to celebrate Pesach Matzah Bikurim this first year. But in the midst of our correspondence, we're writing back and forth a number of times. And he says, and I think it's the same person. If I'm confusing two different people, you know, it's God has a tendency to work with older people whose memories don't work quite as well as they used to. So we have to be really dependent upon Yah. The message I'm going to convey is still from someone who corresponded this last week. So, you know, I'm a little bit concerned in that as we have made this journey, that so much of what you have written about pursuant to Yosha versus Dod has changed. That you spoke a lot about Yosha fulfilling prophecies that now you realize are, and we all realize, always pointed to Dod. Should we be concerned that you were talking about, and he used the term, he says, that you talk so often about Yosha being the Maaseh Yah.
That's not bad.
I shouldn't,
no,
because Yosha is the Maaseh Yah. He is the work of Yah.
Yeah.
Maaseh Yah means work, Maaseh. Yah, the work of Yah.
Yeah.
Dod
yeah.
is the Messiah. He is the Maaseh Yah.
Yeah.
So Dod is the Messiah. Yeah, and Yosha is the Maaseh Yah. And so I realized that I had come up with the term Maaseh Yah because this was a decade ago that I came to realize that the only reference to Messiah, Maaseh Yah, and Yosha was in a prophecy where Yosha is not named. In fact, he's not named in any prophecy. There's not a single prophecy that names Yosha. Thousands that name Dod, by the way, but not a single one that names Yosha. But the one in Daniel where it says that speaking to be cut off, but not for himself, and it uses a form of Maaseh Yah twice in Daniel. I think it's 9. And what I found out is that the variation of Maaseh Yah in that was actually an adjective modifying someone who was set apart as a messenger. And so it wasn't being used as a title. So there was no place that Maaseh Yah was being used as a title. And it's also interesting, you know, in that discussion that was actually written, at least modified by Eusebius, upon, you know, where Simon Kephish says, you know, you are the Christ, and Jebus, the Logos, he turns to him and says, you know, it's God who has revealed this to you, and upon mm-hmm. this rock I'm going to build my church, which is actually Ecclesia, set apart invitation to meet with God. But what does he say right after this? He turned to his disciples and says, don't you tell anyone that I am the Messiah.
Well, that's right. That's
go read
right.
it. Yeah, it's go read it.
Yeah,
in your,
yeah, yeah. No,
it's
no,
in your
I
translation.
It's true.
It says, don't tell anyone that I'm the Messiah. Now, why? Because I'm not. Because
he wasn't the Messiah.
That's
because
why.
Because he was in conflict with Dode.
Yeah, because Dode is the Messiah. But why am I going off on this now? Because here, all these years ago, I realized that Yeshua was not the Messiah. I didn't realize that Dode was the Messiah all that time ago. But I knew that I had to come up with some term that was consistent with Yeshua, which means Yahweh liberates and saves. And that God was doing this through this implement. And so I looked up and I found that there was this combination of work, Masayah, and Yah, and that I could use it because it showed up 22 times as a name, and it was a perfect name/title for the purpose of Yosha, Masayah. And I started using it. And I realized that it wasn't inaccurate. As a matter of fact, Dode was the first to coin the term 3,000 years ago, and it wasn't until a few weeks ago that I realized that the use of Masayah was Dodian, that it was inspired by God. What does this say? I shall not experience a prolonged death. Instead, I will continue to live so that I can recount, record, and relate Masayah.
Masayah.
So, when
refrigerator's getting
Dode
full
is inspired,
now.
When Dode is inspired to say something that just happens to confirm something you came up with 10 years ago, that means that you also had to be inspired to come up with that term.
So you're saying that Yahweh quotes him and Yosha quotes him and Craig quotes him.
Oh, I quote Craig, yes. Well, actually, I wasn't quoting him.
You didn't know it. You didn't know
I
it.
Had no,
then, yeah.
I had no idea that I was quoting him. I had. If I had known, I would have been delighted to know. But of all of the names to come up with and to hear have Dode say, yep, that's it.
Yep, that's what he's about, yeah. Wow.
That's it.
What a thrill. It is thrilling sometimes.
Yeah,
wow.
Sometimes it really is. You just stumble on something and you say, wow, how in the world did Yah manage to do that? He is, he works in marvelous ways. It's amazing what he can do with a dull pencil, right? Yep. Yah teaches and instructs me, even corrects me. I love that too. Even Dode said he corrects me. I've been spending this last 2 weeks trying to correct, you know, the nuances. Yeah, when I'm doing the things with back now and observations, the propensity was that you see any prophecy, and of course you had to read Yosha into the prophecy. And you realize, no, it's really about Dode. But I didn't know that, you know, back then. No. I've learned that. So I'm going back and I'm changing those things so that based upon what we have learned. So that's one of the things I like about Dode is we can follow Dode because Dode mm-hmm. is like us. Yah teaches and instructs me. I can say that. He said that. He even corrects me. I can say that. He said that. He will not give me over to the approach of the plague of death.
Wow. We know who that is.
We have nothing. Yeah, we have nothing to fear from Pauline Christians and Christianity.
Gosh, I wish Yehuda would recognize that.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Open for me the doorway of being right, such that I might enter through it. I want to make a public confession. The doorway of what? Of Sadak. The doorway to God's home.
Look right.
Is the doorway of being right. You know, you open the door to God's home by responding correctly to Passover. Yep.
Correct.
You're able to enter by responding correctly to matzah. You're welcomed inside as part of God's family by responding correctly to Bikurim. Open for me the doorway of being right, such that I might enter through it. I want to make a public confession. You know, that is just a huge part of what we do. We all study Yah's testimony because we enjoy his company. We all benefit from it because it's enlightening. We learn. We're liberated from so many deceptions and enriched by what we learn. But the joy is in sharing it. Freely sharing it. That's the joy. It's like a beautiful sunset or a beautiful full moon dancing between the clouds. Yeah, a pretty Leia just walked up, Stella, beautiful girl. Things are so much better shared. Life is better shared. And so this is what Dode said. I want to make a public profession. I want to share what I know. Truly, truly amazing and lovely. Well, fellas, it's been a wonderful experience sharing Yah's testimony, celebrating the relationship, talking about our world, and you know, for the 30 minutes that we spent on news, there is a reason that transition I think is so important. We look how screwed up the world of man is. It's that contrast that Yah is offering us. And it's separating ourselves from this and coming to rely on Yah that makes so much difference in our lives and why it's so important at this time. And the coronavirus did something for us that I never anticipated, which was I always knew that the hardest sell that we had, particularly with Yahweh's family, Yisrael and Yehuda, was convincing them that the world was going to change profoundly and that sooner rather than later, they needed to listen to what Yahweh had to say and respond to him and come back home. And they would have said, what's the big deal? Life is good. Today was wonderful. Yesterday was good. Tomorrow will be fine. Well, Corona showed us just how quickly man can change our environment, can change our world, can destroy the value of our currency and of our economies and our independence and of our liberty. Changing the world instantly and quickly. And so there is a silver lining. There is a genuine blessing in this, and that it caused us to all realize that everything can change in an instant, and has, and we ain't never going back. Yeah, we're never going.
No, you can't put old Humpty back together this time. No, it's over.
No, it's over. It's over. And it makes this message so much more important. This is the only hope. This is the Titanic, but this Titanic only has one lifeboat.
Yeah.
It's called the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
And she's beautiful.
Yeah,
she has wings. She has wings. Yeah. And so I'm inviting everyone who is listening, jump into it. Trust Yahweh. Trust Yahweh, not men. Now more than ever. All right. Well, this was fun. I'm going to rest my voice and my my weary behind. I've been in this chair for 10 to 14 hours a day for virtually every day.
Okay.
And it is fun, but about this time. Yeah, about this time. No, you know, that's hard to do. That's hard to do because I know there's such a such a need.
Walk on the beach.
Yeah, go for a walk on the beach if nothing else. Well, best to everyone and happy Shabbat. We'll look forward to being with you all this time next week. Thank you, guys. Good night.
Okay, thanks, Ray.
Hang on.